It's been too long.
Has it been a month?
We've been having guests. The last couple we did with guests.
Oh, was I was here for? Oh, since we did one just us.
Just
three,
us three. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we were doing the wellness wheel.
Yeah.
It's nice to have guests, but I also like to have a little more quaint little setting too, right?
Yeah.
Intimate settings.
Right. Intimate.
Like
reluctant to say that word.
Cool. All right. Get into it.
Measurables. Numbers.
Yeah.
Metrics.
What metrics are important? What are not important? And
what are they in the beginning?
Metrics.
Yeah.
Yep.
And when to measure them, as Levi just brought up.
Yeah. I just to start off, like before I took my L1, I never really thought too much about like time, load, all the things that they teach you pretty rudimentary things to track, but there wasn't a ton of trackability when I was just bodybuilding and like just learning basic,
pretty much just weights.
Yeah. The 50 pound dumbbells or the 60 pound dumbbells. It was
right.
Just kind of like, there wasn't a ton of tracking and I didn't pay attention to any factors other than just what the weight was that I was moving.
Right.
But there's so much more that goes on.
Oh yeah.
Behind the scenes.
Well, I guess to start it, what would you think is the most important metric to measure?
The most important depends entirely on the lifespan of the athlete, right? But as far as the first one I'll measure is just a basic capacity test with
yeah.
a low barrier to entry as far as skill. So 10 minutes on the bike is the first one I'll measure because everyone can do it and they're not limited by their skill.
Yeah.
A deficit, right?
Yeah, and getting a baseline measurement like that is so important, I think, when somebody starts. Like, we come in here and we measure their body fat and their muscle mass. Like,
right.
You should also
it's
measure...
A good biometric, right?
Yeah, biometric, and then measure, like, what's their work capacity right now as they are before we even start this program.
This is kind of like a trick answer, but I'd even say measure your sleep is the number one thing.
Absolutely. I would like to jump on it. Yeah, for
like,
sure. Yeah.
Like, how many hours a night are you sleeping and do you track it every night? I'd say that's the most important one. And then after that, I'd say, like, what's your, I don't know, maybe either protein or hydration.
Okay, now we're taking it there. So I'm going to say breathing is the first one I'd measure because it has such an overreaching umbrella for the rest.
Yeah.
Because if you fix breathing, you can fix sleep or get better at sleep. And then sleep. And, of course, nutrition as well would be some major ones.
When you say measuring breath, would you measure, like, your lung capacity or like your...
Well, like the basic test I'll start people off with is just a CO2 exhalation test. So
yeah.
I'm measuring your capacity to tolerate CO2, which in order to even the biggest limiter of performance for everyone, but including even high-level athletes, is over-breathing. So they're trying to purge out CO2 faster than they need to so they don't have a balanced amount of O2 to CO2. So if we are... if we're oxygen-deprived, it's not... Usually because we have a deficit of CO2, it's because we can't tolerate enough. I'm sorry, we have a deficit of O2, it's because we can't tolerate enough CO2,
mm-hmm.
which is the vehicle that carries O2 throughout the body. So that tells us right away, which most people are, unless they specifically train, to bring their CO2 tolerance up because we're mouth breathers as a society.
Mm-hmm.
That's likely going to be a big governor of our optimal performance.
And those metrics, I think we touched on a little bit, but they're not so important. They're more important to the coach than the athlete at the beginning, I think. But then that might switch, that like structure might switch a bit as the training age increases and as the athlete gains proficiency, the metrics may become more important to them.
Yeah.
And less on the coach to track.
And that's also important, I think, to emphasize is that what primarily should be tracked for the athlete or the client at first is not the load, not the weight. Yeah, sure, you can pay attention to that, but your quality should be tracked. Your virtuosity of the movement should be tracked, and that takes precedence over trying to be super mindful about how much weight you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But if you can keep your quality high and progress in weight, then great, have at it. Take note of where you're progressing to. But I stay far away from max contractions, 5 rep max, 3 rep max, 1 rep max, early on in the person's training age.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get to that till later on down the road when we've checked some prerequisite boxes.
Mm. And I think it's less concrete for some, like a newer person to be like, all right, it's easy for me to just get the clock measurement or to get the weight measurement on the bar, and it's less, there's less tangibility to like your movement, right?
Right.
But that is something that we need to be able to quantify, like via a coach's eye or even a video that can have, you know, a coach's perspective on. But it's hard, I think, for people to be like, how do I quantify if I'm doing it right? Or if I'm moving right?
That's tricky, because the thing is, if you tell someone, we're going to be tracking your time.
Mm-hmm.
But if we've already established that movement virtuosity is priority, but now that you've tacked out, okay, we're going to see how fast you can do this too, then they're likely to fall into the psychology of, okay, I'm just going to go fast because they're top tracking my time. They forget that the movement quality is the most important.
The first thing.
Right.
Yeah.
And they're like, I got to get a good time. So that's why I try and really emphasize to everyone, don't worry about your time at the beginning. It'll get there. And ultimately, you'll be a much better athlete if you focus on moving well before moving fast.
Yeah. And that's consistent with all the methodology. It just gets lost in the execution a lot. Like, we've said that a million times on here, but it's baked into the ideas of, you know, how to train people.
Yeah. Yeah, for, like, my metrics have changed over the years, too. Like, I used to really worry about the seconds and, like, a workout, like, frame. Like, a benchmark workout, I'd be like, all right, I did it in 3 minutes and 12 seconds.
Yeah.
And then I did it in 3:08.
Yeah.
And then I did it in 3:15. And then I would like, oh my God, this sucks. I can't believe I added 7 seconds to
right.
my time.
Yeah. Get
and,
caught up.
Yeah.
In the,
and now it's like, that's basically the same thing.
Right.
Like,
it is. Yeah. It's funny.
That's a matter of like, did I, you know, sleep well, eat well,
mm-hmm.
like what time of day is it? Those are going to make the differences in seven seconds.
For sure, yeah.
And so
absolutely.
I don't measure those as much anymore.
For me, on any given day, I glance at the clock at the end. But what I'm measuring during the workout is how I'm feeling for it.
Yeah.
And what that has turned into is I have surpassed what I could do as a younger man that was training far longer without being anywhere near as exhausted, because I'm really in tune with how I'm feeling. So I can adjust intuitively.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, if you can arrive at a spot where you're measuring how you're feeling, you're measuring what your breathing is, what your heart rate's like, if you can do that during workouts, that's way more important than what the result is.
Yeah.
Because if you're measuring, like, those lag, that's basically a lag indicator. Like,
right.
The result isn't as important as the work put in.
And it governs the pace to keep you more sustained as well.
Right.
If you're being mindful of that, that's an acquired skill.
Right.
But I like to say I use the time as a tool, not a target.
Yeah.
So I can observe what the time is at the end, but I'm not chasing a time.
Right.
For me, as like somebody who's kind of in the middle stage, I guess, training age wise, I also view these measurements as kind of just baselines that I hold my personal standard to. Like, I want to be able to run a mile in under 7 minutes whenever I need to. I want to be able to squat close to 400 pounds whenever I need to. I want to be able to maintain 20 strict pull-ups whenever I need to. And not necessarily that those numbers have a huge value innately, but just me knowing what my standards are for my workload and my baseline strength and what I want to try to upkeep for aerobic capacity throughout the year. It's nice to have that trackability where all right, I'm going to time this run because I want to be able to sustain, you know, 80% of my fastest mile throughout the year or something like that.
I think that's a good approach. Yeah.
One thing is, I think is overlooked, though, is you want to make sure, at least if you're trying to be well-rounded, CrossFit, right, is you want to make sure not anything, any given thing is not getting too high.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if we're getting a 600-pound deadlift, you can bet that we're sacrificing a lot in other areas. I mean, there was a time where I could do 40 strict pull-ups. But I was also, I was realizing that other things were being thrown in the fire for that.
Mm-hmm.
So I've learned to have, like you were saying, have a baseline of stuff But then that baseline allows me to maintain a certain amount of level, but I'm not sacrificing too much as well.
Yeah.
So just because it feels you get a dopamine rush from surpassing an old lifetime PR doesn't mean you necessarily should.
Yeah. Right? And it doesn't necessarily mean you're better off right now than you were then either.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
And I think for me, like, the personal attachments to, like, the day-to-day wins don't exist as much, because as long as I'm maintaining my personal standards of, like, capacity, strength, and let's say skill, where I would like them to be, then the day-to-day, like, fluctuations, like you're talking about 7 seconds here, a minute there, 10 pounds here, those things, they don't have the value that when I was younger and more competitive minded that I attached that value to.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I fought so hard for that 5 seconds.
I used to be obsessed over the time. I obsessed.
Right.
Like, I would meticulously watch it, be speeding myself up to the point of about passing out in order to achieve a certain, what, an inch around interval, right? But now I never pay it in mind. I barely look at the clock.
Right.
I don't even remember my times anymore because it's all based off of how I feel.
Yeah. And that is a sophisticated and mature place to aim for eventually.
Right.
And I think if we can get people to learn CrossFit from the jump about, hey, just to put it out there, we personally as coaches don't really care how fast you can do this or how heavy you can go. I just want to see you move well. I want to see you not get injured. I want to see you show up continuously, fix your nutrition, learn these skills the right way. Then it kind of bakes it in from the jump, like the importance of quality and in a way, the unimportance of quantity.
Yeah. I'll tag on to that, that I think you should be mindful to assess things you have a basic amount of competence in and not before then. If you know that you're not quite up to speed with Olympic lifting, then it's probably not a good idea to do a one rep max. Right? You should be able to do the movement well and have confidence and know what you're doing before we really test the limits or test the threshold of what you can do with it first. Before
right.
then, you're just developing the skill of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like the idea of having like a guidelines or like rails that you stay in. Like if your mile time starts going above 8 minutes, and then it's like a time to check in and be like, all right, what's going on? Like, what have I changed something? Or same with like body fat percentage. Like, all right, I'm going above 19% or something. That's like where I drew a hard line. Like, what's going on? I'm probably not focusing on my nutrition or sleeping enough or consistent enough, something like that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those guardrails, that's a really nice analogy for it, is
for
measurables, is just having guardrails,
right?
But not necessarily always a specific target for everything.
Right. It's kind of like blood work. Like, you have...
check under the hood,
see what's
a little diagnostic of what's deeper,
right.
deeper there, right?
Yeah.
I think it's very important with the sleep, going back on that, is that if you are reaching a place of stagnation, that you really analyze what your lifestyle guidelines are consisting of and how effectively you're doing it. Because you can't train yourself out of a bad diet or bad nutrition or poor sleep. And poor sleep is even a level above poor nutrition. We all talk to our, we're blue in the face about how important it is for nutrition. But without question, sleep is even more important. So if you're suffering in some way and you've seen yourself deteriorate on those things that you've already developed confidence enough to test, then that's likely a good culprit for what is the cause of such stagnation, right? Or injury,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
There's one phenomenon I'm sure you guys have all experienced personally and as a coach, and I have as well, that I continuously see in class settings especially, that I think is a hard subject to broach with people, but so since we track repeated workouts year to year, right? You can see in SugarWatt, all right, I did this workout 3 times over the past 3 years, and here's the time I got 3 years ago. And then that turns into like, I constantly have to do a faster time or a heavier weight than I did this time last year. And if I didn't, that means I got less fit. And that rationale is sound.
Yeah.
At that level.
It's a track.
It is.
Yeah.
Because there's so much more nuance going on with like, all this other stuff we're talking about, sleep, nutrition, lifestyle, stress, like those things need to account for, you're not always going to be able to perform the same way in
right.
the same domain year after year, especially as you age. Like those numbers that you hit when you were 35 versus when you were 38, they're not necessarily, they shouldn't be the same
right.
ones you're aiming for anymore.
You can't, for a lifetime, progress up.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I wish we could. I've accepted, I have very likely done my last deadlift PR,
yeah.
lifetime PR.
Yeah.
Right? I don't care. I'm happy because most importantly to me, the biggest metric for me is how do I feel?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel better than I ever can remember because I'm training in a way that's much smarter than what I used to train.
And more, let's say, in cahoots with the reality of your body.
Right, exactly,
yeah.
It was a process to get there.
Yeah.
And it took me, I paid a heavy price at times, but I feel the best I ever had and the most prepared for everything that I want, that life could possibly throw at me.
Yeah. I think if you come in and you're like 24 years old, you've never worked out before, then like those first 3 years, like you should be seeing significant increases across
yeah.
the board. And so it's kind of like, it's nice to track that because it is just a dopamine hit. But also, like, if you're not seeing those progressions over 3 years, then there's probably something going on with your sleep or nutrition or hydration, those things that
yeah.
we talked about. But then you have to kind of evolve, like, all right, now
you're
doing it.
Or your intensity even, right?
Yeah. Like now, so say you did everything perfect for 3 years and your measurements have been, like, kicking butt. You PR every time you do a workout, every time you do a lift. But then now it's 5-10 years down the road. Like, you can't just continually peaking for that long because,
right.
A, you're getting older, but also you've reached a adaptation where,
right.
like, getting another 1% is going to take so much work.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you're going to have to devote, you're going to be at the fringe of that time that you spend in the gym just to get that percentage. And you,
right.
at the meanwhile, you've lost your abundant life that you want
right.
to live, right?
Yeah, lost your family, but got a deadlift.
But I gained 10 pounds in my deadlift.
But, yeah, so I think, like, knowing when, like, expectations are kind of a big part of measurements.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, they're so intertwined.
Yeah. When you're young, totally, you should be.
You have much more to work with as far as bandwidth,
right.
energetic bandwidth,
yeah.
and recovery bandwidth. Yeah.
And young as an athlete, but young in your training age also.
Yeah.
And I think it's cool to see what your body is capable of doing. And the only way to really know that is to measure things, to have
right.
consistent tracking of your load and your time and your output. But that's not, like we've been talking about, that's not just like a never-ending thing. You've got to be wise enough to know that you've gotten to a place where, like, hey, I'm cool with what I can do. And I want to now be able to do this long-term, healthfully
right.
and non-injury prone and... that's different for everybody. Like, that spot is different for everybody. So it's not something that the coach can necessarily look at you and be like, all
right,
you're there. You can start,
right.
you know, doing this. You can stop worrying about that.
Right.
But it comes to more like the athlete's own wisdom and knowledge of themselves.
Yeah. And for the aging clients, you got to consider this too, is that to a point in considering their training age, if you're just now starting off the first time you've ever started resistance training and you're 65, then yeah, you're probably going to see some growth still because your training, even though your age is higher, your training age is new.
Right.
But even then, you're probably going to get to the place of resisting entropy quicker than you definitely will. So you're getting to a place where you're just trying to diminish the amount of muscle you lose and gain bone density and not lose bone density, rather so than expecting enormous gains for a while.
Yeah.
It's the reality of aging.
Right.
Yes.
And that's again, like, expectations. Like, I'm not going to name names, but there's some, like, older guys that they want a PR
yeah.
and they push it so
yeah.
hard every day. And they're
right.
like, what? Like, I got a PR.
Yeah, that,
like,
beast is still in them.
Right.
And they're comparing themselves to the younger men they used to be, right?
Right?
Yeah.
That's
often,
hard,
yeah.
That's probably more of a... That's a hard pill to swallow.
But you'll get taught that lesson one way or another, right?
Yeah, because you'll get completely broken.
Right,
way.
Yeah.
I'm trying to swallow it early before I even need to.
Okay.
So, I'm retired. I'm just doing it for...
yeah.
That's the rhetoric I
well,
like
I'm
to...
Just, I see the writing on the wall for, like, where things lead, and I want to... I always tell Liz my goal, as far as fitness goes, my goal is to be a jacked grandpa. And I'm like,
yeah.
I just want to be like that fit old dude.
I'm trying to,
like,
shift gears
right.
into mountain climbing now.
Yeah.
Trying to,
yeah. Exactly.
I still have something. You can be an old mountain climber.
Yeah, you got cool stuff to do.
Right?
So many other cool things to do other than like, oh, I PR'd my back squat again.
Right.
But not to diminish those wins, because those are still wins, but there's a, you know, there's a level you reach where you're okay with it.
And ultimately, it comes down to this. We're all doing this, I think, or most of us are. We're not professional exercisers. We're doing this to help us live the life outside the gym. So if we get caught up in just pursuing gym endeavors and not seeking out real life endeavors, then we're kind of missing the boat here.
Yeah, 100%.
So I'd say, like, for a younger athlete, it's not necessarily anything wrong with, like, chasing the numbers and, like, seeing what you're capable of, you know, as long as you have those prerequisites of moving well and all that stuff. But, and then as you age a little bit, then it's like, all right, what can I hold on to? Can I be like a, you know, 70-year-old and have and be jacked, like have good muscle mass, good body fat percentage, good cardiovascular health?
Right.
And then it's like, now I'm 90 and can I still wipe my own butt?
How long can you save up?
Yeah, that's the measurement.
Well, did you guys know who Jack LaLanne is?
Oh yeah.
So have you heard of Jack LaLanne? So he was this fitness guru for a long time, and I've always looked at him as just a remarkable feat of longevity.
He was like the original CrossFitter.
Right, exactly, yeah. So I think it was his 90th or maybe 95th birthday. He decided to celebrate this by swimming through some preposterously long channel.
Alcatraz, right?
I don't know. Was it Alcatraz? Maybe. I thought it was a channel.
Okay.
I think he did Alcatraz too, you know.
With a canoe or something?
No, he tugged
a canoe behind his back.
Much, much bigger deal than this. It's crazy. It's nonsense is what it is. He did two tugboats.
No
then
way.
He swam a channel with two tugboats at like 90. It's recorded. This is video recorded.
That's crazy.
It's wild. Like, that is absolutely... But the thing is, he devoted his life. He said he hadn't had a sweet... since he was something like no sweets, since he was like 22 or something like that.
Right.
And that's not quite the life I want to live, even though I'm avid about this stuff.
Right.
I don't want to be that strict with my life where I'm abandoning everything for the sake of, I mean, I'm guessing he was really happy.
Yeah.
But right. I'd rather not have such rigid structure to
brownies are freaking good.
Brownies are good, I tell you.
Brownies are real good.
Yeah, he was way ahead of his game.
Yeah.
Way ahead of his time. But also, it was like back then, it was easier to be healthy.
Yeah,
Was
all this stuff wasn't thrown in our faces, and
yeah,
we were eating more naturally. It was healthier to
right.
eat natural. It was actually cheaper than eating unhealthy, right?
Right. But yeah, he used to go. Yeah, he was like a big for like the stay-at-home moms, like Jack LaLanne out.
Yeah. Yeah, he was big for a while. You never heard of him, huh?
I know the name, but I didn't know who he was or what he was known for, you know?
Yeah.
I think there's a LaLanne CrossFit.
Was that
like his son?
Like,
I think I've heard of that one, yeah.
Yeah.
50s and 60s?
It was a long time ago. He's an old guy,
yeah.
But he was well known into his old age.
Yeah.
But he finally died, but he made it a good long while at the being able to do whatever
he
wanted.
Was he involved in the JFK Presidential Fitness Challenge?
That's maybe
how I know his name.
Maybe. I'm not quite sure on that history. I only know him because I was stunned at his 90th birthday. And then I started researching more about him, but I didn't research that extensively.
Yeah. One other thought with the measurements, and this I think goes more for like CrossFit class settings and especially for the coach. If let's say you have like an example, like a 5-minute AMRAP like today, and everybody's in the 4 to 5 round range, but then you have one person who will got 2 rounds in the 5 minutes,
yeah.
Then it's a clear indicator. Those measurements are also a clear indicator of like you did something wrong and completely.
But they hit it RX.
Yes.
Right. Hit it RX. Yeah. Don't worry about it. It's an arbitrary number. Like.
Yes. But like those numbers like
right.
inform us like you missed and it informs the athlete you missed the stimulus completely because you overloaded, you went beyond your bounds or you moved poorly or whatever. Or if somebody like way outdoes, you know, they did 20 rounds.
Right.
Hey, you didn't hit the load
right.
you wanted to hit today.
RX or closer to RX does not equal more fitness.
Yeah.
And
right.
so often it equals a lot less adaptation dose response. Right?
Yeah.
It's a lot less.
Yeah, it doesn't equal a better workout just because you did it RX.
So. And it's all about dose response and healthy dose response. Are we, one, not pushing ourselves towards injury, but are we getting the best adaptation from it?
Mm-hmm.
Real quick, so I'll tell you what, I use a specific structure for measurements, And like we kind of mentioned earlier that we all do, first thing is I measure motor control with some basic patterns across and see our control and technique across these different movement patterns, squat, lunge, bend, core, push, pull, and our capacity for like scapular retraction and a pull movement. But then after motor control, I won't get anyone into testing like a one rep or a three rep or a five rep. I do their strength endurance first. So I see that they're able to, with enough reps at a lower amount of weight, see that they can do it across, like for example, the core pattern would be five reps of strict knees to elbows at a 3-0-X-1. The bend pattern, our strength endurance test that I do, is a 2-minute Sorensen hold. Now, let's say we check that box, we get a 2-minute Sorensen hold, so that's just your chest facing the ground, you're on the GHD or parallel to the ground. Then we get that, then that's an indicator, okay, now we can start working towards, let's seeing what our max contractions is. And the next cycle, like we can finally get that established, and we've done it by following properly what would be safe for us to, and what would be effective for us to.
Yeah.
Because that's literally telling us this isn't effective to do max contractions yet, because we don't have capacity for harder contractions. We have capacity for longer contractions at lower weight, but longer contractions will equal harder contractions much faster. And then once we've tested the strength endurance and we've gotten further along with meeting those prerequisites, then we can start beginning to test, as long as we've checked the box for that pattern, the strength endurance, we can test max contractions. So if someone has a 20 rep max goblet squat, and for an example of this, is for men, it would be 60% of their body weight. For women, it would be 50% of their body weight. If they've got that, then we can start thinking about, hey, let's see what we can get for three reps. I mean, I would start at five reps. I might, just to get the, initially, might start with a one rep just to see where we're at as far as what we can do. Mm-hmm. And I feel comfortable to let them do that one rep.
Yeah.
But also emphasizing, let's not get a one rep where we let the wheels wobble off. Let's get a one rep where we look and feel great about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like they call that a technique PR,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think all PRs should be a technique PR,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah. And in that way, too, it's less of a liability for somebody to move on to,
yep,
to the next thing, because they put in the foundational work.
Exactly, right? Yep. And the other thing I'll tag on to that is, even if we are looking at what we test as far as the strength endurance, and versus max contractions. First, it would be, I think this, when you think about it, makes perfect sense that we start off with the archetypes. So like, instead of a clean and jerk, which has a bunch of different archetypes in it, we start off with a squat as your absolute strength. We start off with a front squat, right? We develop those patterns, and then once we develop across the patterns that a clean and jerk make up, or a press, right, an overhead press, once we've established our competence and our proficiency at it, then later on we can way more effectively, and we know the individual archetypes that movement contains, to be able to very, very, very easily teach someone a clean and jerk, and they instantly pick it up. Which is, the clean and jerk and snatch are in contention of the two hardest moves in all of athletics, but if they follow that process, then they can very easily pick it up. Maybe they're not going to get world record weights just yet, but we don't have to go through that arduous process of trying over and over and over again. It always feels a little sloppy. It looks really clean if we do it the right way. And then we can test things like, if we're looking at speed strength, then we can do like a throwing a ball, right? Or for a fighter, a punch would be speed strength. Or a box jump would be speed strength.
Mm. Yep. And those metrics we don't use in the CrossFit space very often, but like D1 athletics and strength coaches measure velocity on the bar and measure vertical jump, how long were you off the platform for. They have,
right,
these barometers.
There's like box jumps and med ball throws,
yeah,
right? There's
like
wall
that.
Balls, which would be a speed strength.
For sure.
But you're not going to really throw the heaviest wall ball you can up.
Yeah.
But you could see, you can start testing the waters on strength endurance for it, for a speed strength. There's really not much you're going to be doing the hardest punch you could do either. For a max contraction, for example, for a speed strength.
Yeah.
And then later on, if we don't even need to develop across the whole continuum, but then on the very end of that continuum, we have absolute speed, right? But not everyone needs to do absolute speed. That would be
like
a 100-meter dash,
yeah,
or a 50-meter swim, going as balls to the wall as you can go.
And the reason that's way on the other side is because it's far more likely, if you're not developed, that you're not going to do it very well. But two, there's a high propensity for injury. But what's cool, if we spend time in the part of the continuum of which would be appropriate for us too, you don't have to train the other parts of the continuum to see massive progress in them. Because you're developing the part of the continuum which is going to lead you to the best dose response.
Right. Yeah. I think if you were to break that down in like measurables, that's kind of like first measure how you're moving. Second.
With reps, right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And then second would be measure like the foundational movements.
Right.
Like the squat, the press.
Yeah. For the strength endurance. Yeah.
And then measure from there, maybe slightly more complex movements like a thruster or push press.
Yeah.
And then start measuring those Olympic lifts. Because the Olympic lifts, like, you can't even, it's almost useless to measure weights when you don't know.
It's such a difficult movement. And a lot of people get frustrated with them, especially early on.
Right.
But it's far more difficult if we're already trying to learn all the other stuff, the archetypes of, if we can't squat very well, it's not going to go very well for us to try and clean something. Right.
So like measure the simple things when you first start CrossFit, measure your squat, your press, even like simple things like a 2K row or a 10 minute bike.
Yeah, absolutely. Cyclical is a great way to measure for the newer athlete 5K. For the aerobic value of it, right? If we're going to if we start off a cyclical for measuring aerobic value, because you'll get a truer indicator of what that energy system is capable of, rather than we're throwing in a bunch of stuff that people might not necessarily know how to do, we can much easier teach someone to do something cyclical. Then later on they develop competence, we can start making those measurements more and more mixed modality if we're wanting to for aerobic.
And that's that, like those workouts like measuring your Fran or those benchmark CrossFit workouts in the beginning, those, like, it's probably good to get a little idea of what you did last time, but those are going to change so significantly for people, like say Elizabeth, for example, which we do on day three and elements as an example of how you can take an extremely complex workout and simplify it.
Yeah.
And usually we will simplify it to like front squat or goblet squat and push-ups or something. Like measuring those benchmark CrossFit workouts, that's not super important in the beginning even, because it's like there's so many factors in it. Like do you know how to do the movement? And then there's the conditioning piece also. So, yeah, I think starting with those simple movements, either the bike, the run, or the row, those ones you can measure, I think, from the start.
You can pretty quickly teach someone to do rowing good enough.
Right.
So that it's you're capable of measuring it,
right?
Effectively.
Yeah. And then there's like that, once you're moving well, you're proficient on all the movements, your conditioning is good, then you can start measuring those benchmarks.
Yeah. The measurement at the beginning, even with those benchmarks, those mixed modality benchmarks like Elizabeth or Fran, whatever, if you're going to measure it early on, then measure how well you're doing, how well the movement's going. Because that's still the first and most important measurement of all. Sometimes we skip right by that, and we get fixated on speed.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, like to give my Fran times as an example, like the first time I did it RX, it took me just over 10 minutes.
Yep. Me too. Or it was like 10 minutes or something around that.
And I moved perfectly the whole time.
Yeah, I did.
And then...
that was a long time ago. No one knew moved perfectly.
And then I did like 8 minutes, and then I did 5, and then... And I think it's important to measure those because they're big changes. Like, it shows that I'm making significant changes. And then I got to like 4 minutes, 3.5, 3:18, 3:10, 3:08, and then it's like not very important.
Yeah, it sounds relevant. You can do it. You're at a good level.
Right.
You don't need to be fixated on improving 10 seconds off a 3 minute frame, right?
Right.
But when we measure the speed too fast, it's putting the cart before the horse.
Right.
Yeah.
Like if I would go back and I could talk to myself in a room, I'd be like, "Stop caring about time. Fix your movement."
Right.
Yeah, that's a good lesson for anybody stepping in any gym anywhere.
Yeah, for sure, 100% applicable to whatever you're doing, movement
or sport.
Yeah, sport and movement; those are all intertwined.
Let's teach you how to turn your hand over in a punch
yep.
and rotate your hip before we start
right.
throwing a four-piece combo.
Or
you know?
Even more of an emphasized example is, let's say we are in a, we're learning to box, right? What if the first day learning to box, what if we threw someone into a ring and had them sparring with someone? Now seeing how you do. That would be before you even learn how to strike.
Yeah.
So that person is not competing yet. They're learning how to strike first.
Yeah.
And then later on, they can apply that to actually
right.
sparring with someone.
And then also, for that example, if you started sparring early, you're going to develop bad habits.
Absolutely.
And so then it's hard to fix them.
And the travesty of that statement is this. It's crazy because you get your chance that you're first exposed to something to really very easily imprint good movement. So every time when you're first exposed to it, you allow yourself to imprint bad movement, you're making it so much harder if you decide to finally fix it to go back and do it.
Mm.
It's so much easier to learn it the first time than it is to go back years later after bad patterns have been imprinted, and I know this by experience,
right.
to go back and fix yourself. It's much, much harder.
Yeah, it's just the way the brain works.
Yeah. Yeah, those motor patterns
yep.
are so, what's the word? They're viable and they're malleable.
Right.
When you're making
the grooves for them.
Yes.
Right? Yep.
Fresh coat of powder on the mountain.
Yep.
It's easy to get that run in. But
yep.
once those skis have gone down 10 times,
right.
it's like, all right, to
yep.
come off that path that you just laid for 10 times.
You
got to
put a lot of work in there. Yep.
It's going to take
yep.
a little extra oomph.
Yep.
I
like to say, and you guys heard me say this, it's as if, speaking of skiing, it's as if you were trying to, first time skiing before, and you were trying to learn to ski by jumping right to the black diamonds. Well, doesn't matter that you're trying, that would be like going RX, right? Going RX too early on. Doesn't matter that your intentions are to just go hard, you're not going to get much out of it because you're going to be falling every few steps. Now, if you started off in the bunny slopes and you learn just to nice and smoothly go down, then you're going to learn to ski much, much, much faster, well, at least, than if you were trying to get ahead of yourself and jumping on the diamonds.
Mm.
And just to detach in a little bit, just because like I'm just happy people want to come and work out and be healthy. So to give the devil his due in a way, like I think there is a degree of it's okay to be motivated by like wanting to move a heavier barbell and wanting to do a better Murph or whatever those things are. If that's going to get somebody from being sedentary to like having some motivation to see progress, if they're a person who's easily kind of motivated by those numbers,
mm-hmm.
as long as they're checking these boxes and moving well, I'm kind of okay in a way to let that. I'd rather that than not. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
I'd rather them be like, I want to like get my back squat up to snuff. I want to be able to run that mile time.
Yeah, for sure. But
know?
As long as they're pursuing it in a way that's going to allow them long-term growth.
Yeah.
Right?
And that's
yeah.
kind of the coach's job to
right.
be like, that's awesome, you're excited about it. Like, here's how to get there.
Yep.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. And those,
yeah.
like, the build options we've been adding in, like, I'm very much pushing new people, and even people who've been here who might have some let's say, inconsistencies with their movements. Like, just tempo stuff,
yep.
do the lighter loads, rebuild the way that
yep.
it should be. Like, Frank experienced this recently. Shout out to Frank. Frank broke his foot in a skiing accident, or water skiing.
Yeah, water skiing, right? Yeah.
But he spent like 3 months like not really being able to do any load. But
yeah.
obviously Frank can't not move because he's Frank. So he's
get him a turbo wheel.
Yeah. Frank's rebuilding all these patterns with no load
yeah.
over like 2-3 months.
Which can be a blessing sometimes.
Yeah.
Right? Yep.
And this morning he's in my class. I'm like, I've never seen you front squat that good.
Yeah.
And you haven't front squatted in 3 months because
yeah.
or front squatted load in 3 months. You know.
And
right.
he's doing it. His technique is. Is the best you've seen it?
Positions
yeah.
are
right.
just much more upright, and he's not, you know, hinging. And I think sometimes to bring it back, it's hard. Like, obviously, he had an injury that forced him to.
Yeah.
But to just, like, make the decision, like, I'm going to rebuild this movement
right.
pattern, and I'm not going to worry about if I'm doing the right percentage
right.
today. Or
I love that. Sorry.
Yeah.
I've said this before, but I'm grateful. If I could avoid it, I would. But I'm grateful for all the injuries I've ever had, because I would have never have learned how I move more effectively in order to go beyond that had I not had them. I'd wish someone had pinned me to a room and told me, hey, look, don't do it this way. But there wasn't that coaching available, or very much so available, at the places where I was at
yeah.
at the time. Yeah. It was more, a lot of it was self-taught.
Yeah, and I think you hit it on the head. Like, the coach's role in a lot of ways is to help guide those decisions.
Right.
And maybe subversively motivate that person in one direction or the other. Like, you know, I'm going to congratulate you because you moved well in that front squat, not because you PR'd your
right,
weight.
Yes.
Right.
I love it.
And I'm going to give that praise for other reasons other than your time or your RX or your X, Y, and Z.
And I think it would be good to remember that all of us, every coach here, wants to see them reach their absolute optimal level. We all do. And we've got the years of experience in order to help that person achieve that more so than someone trying to figure it out on their own.
Mm-hmm.
So anything, any technique offering that we have is with the hope that they're going to get to their optimal level. That's why we're offering it. We're not just throwing it out to hear ourselves speak.
Yeah.
We're wanting them to reach their optimal.
Yeah. So to close it out, we kind of like,
meandered.
We kind of always come back to sleeping and eating and moving well. So like to, but for metrics, like,
that was a loud clap, sorry.
Track how many hours a night you sleep.
Yep.
Get that in line. Sleep. Track how much water you're getting. Track how much protein you're getting.
Yeah, for sure.
Your consistency.
Yeah, then track, yeah, your consistency.
If nothing else, protein, right?
Yeah.
If that's all you have the energy for, then make sure you're getting enough protein,
yeah.
Especially if you're trying to build muscle. Right.
That's all I have the bandwidth for, but tracking is what made me realize, like, I thought, I get enough protein.
Yeah.
And then I measured it, and I was getting, like, 120 a day.
Yeah.
120 grams, and I was like, oh, crap. Like, I got to add 80 grams of protein in somehow.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then when you're working out, measure those simple things in the beginning and measure how you feel.
Yep.
Yep. And those numbers will only get you so far, right? If you don't focus on all those fundamental things you
right.
said. Those numbers, the value of those numbers and the times and the weights shouldn't necessarily be that valuable to you.
Right.
Yeah.
If you haven't first
yeah, use,
done all the good
use
work.
Use the numbers to get you to your goals
yeah.
and to track
yeah.
you. Don't get obsessed with the numbers.
And
right.
long run, you'll get the numbers up way
right.
way higher than you would if you didn't follow that process.
Yeah.
All right, another good one, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I think we got pretty excited for that one.
Yeah. I think you did one very